CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. Lee, if you'd like to introduce our sponsors.
Absolutely. Today we'd like to thank Delaney Consulting LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney services as outstanding and excellent. Also, the SAP Business by Design solution is a single integrated business management solution that delivers the best of SAP software on demand, offering the benefits of larger applications without the need for a costly IT infrastructure. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics detailed in their 2010-2011 edition, many successful insurance companies will recognize the Internet's potential as a powerful marketing tool, increasing employment growth of some occupations while slowing the growth of others. Growing use of the Internet might reduce costs for insurance companies, but it also could enable many clients to turn first to the Internet to get information on their policies, obtain price quotes on possible new policies, or to submit claims. As insurance companies begin to offer more information and services on the Internet, employment in some occupations, such as insurance sales agents, could be adversely affected. Productivity gains caused by the greater use of computer software will continue to limit the growth of certain jobs within the insurance industry. For example, upgrades to underwriting software have helped increase underwriter productivity. Automated underwriting quickly rates and analyzes insurance applications, thereby reducing the need for underwriters. Workers in property and casualty insurance, particularly in auto insurance, will be most affected by increasing reliance on the Internet. Auto policies are relatively straightforward and can be issued more easily without the involvement of a live agent. Also, auto premiums tend to cost more per year than do other types of policies, so people are much more likely to shop around for the best price, and the Internet makes it easier to compare rates among companies. Well, that is a very relevant news article for us today. I am joined today by Sherry Williams to discuss the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Sherry.
Thank you, Lorraine. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Sherry, you are the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Assurance America Corporation. Previously, you were Vice President with 21st Century Insurance and Financial Services with Swift Denim. Leading their financial and logistics functions, having started in the financial planning area. Your strategic and financial planning expertise began with Tom's Food, Inc., and you've also held financial leadership and compliance roles with two leading banks, Citizens Bank and Fidelity Federal, SNL. So, Sherry, in your current role, you oversee finance for Assurance America, a large auto insurance company, and I'm sure you'll tell us a little bit about that. But let's start by looking at your background and your early career experience. Tell us about your first position in your career and how that led you to where you are today.
Okay, certainly. Well, I guess I took a little bit of a different track out of college than probably many of the CFOs that you have interviewed, as I did not pursue the typical path through public accounting. At the time, I really had an interest in financial services and banking. It's interesting, my mother was CEO of a bank and a real role model for me, and so I really decided that I wanted to pursue that path as well. So I started my career in banking. You know, I had some great opportunities. I learned a lot. I was in that industry about 4 years, but then just really realized that it really wasn't my passion. And so as a result, I started thinking about what I might like to do, and an opportunity presented itself with Tom's Foods. At the time, they were a wholly owned subsidiary of General Mills, and they were in the process of building a new manufacturing plant in the area where we were currently living. So it turned out to be a great opportunity, a great learning experience early in my career. I had the opportunity to go in, I call it kind of a grounds-up opportunity. I had to hire and train my entire staff. So that was, you know, something that was new and challenging for me at that point in my career. And that, you know, staff included not only accounting personnel, but also, you know, I had customer service and inventory management and things that were, you know, that I really didn't have any background or experience in.
That's quite a heavy position to be thrown into at such a young age.
It was, but quite honestly, I had a lot of great support. I had a really good mentor, and the organization itself really was very good at providing leadership development and training as well. So those were certainly very important to me. I spent several years as the plant controller, and then had other opportunities to move into the corporate headquarters, which is where I really began, I guess, in the financial planning and analysis roles. But a number of years there, and ultimately was the corporate controller when I left.
So you jumped from controllership on the accounting, closing the books, receivables, payables, balance sheet, P&L, over to that planning, which is much clearly more strategic in nature. It's looking at that future. How was that shift for you? Very, very often we perhaps might be mentors to people that are in one of the avenues of finance tends to be thought of as non-accounting, and accounting tends to be thought of as non-finance. And if someone wants to switch, would you have potentially some advice for that?
Yes, I think it really is around applying, I guess, a lot of the analytical skills that you develop through not only in through college, but it's also just about taking a different view of things. It's really, I call it more of a. It's not like forensic accounting, but it really is, if you have a curious nature. So I tell people, I said, just keep asking, be curious, ask why. Don't just settle for an answer. You need to really understand, what's driving a result, understand what the business drivers are, and then how you can apply that also to, the direction of the organization.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. And I think also that potentially lends itself to the accounting side. We've had so many financial restatements here in the U.S. I know that we have some global listeners. There have been some based on other regulation and reporting in other countries, but we've had a very large saturation of it, and they are now coming down in numbers, certainly. Who knows whether we've got another Enron or WorldCom out there. But that focus on detail is part of what you're talking about. And is that of particular importance for the auto insurance industry?
Oh, certainly. I think it definitely applies to the auto industry, and particularly insurance, because of the regulations, with it being a regulated industry. You can't overemphasize, I guess, the attention to detail in that industry.
Mm-hmm. Good lessons learned. Well, was there a specific career move that you made that was perhaps significant for you as you look back?
Well, I've really had a lot of opportunities and the chance to really do a lot of different things in my career. But I guess when I left Tom's Foods, I moved over to another, still in the manufacturing industry, a company by the name of Swift Denim. They were a global manufacturer of textiles, actually sold to all of the major denim manufacturers. And a couple of things there gave me the opportunity to gain some global experience. In that role, I really led strategic planning, and we were actively, looking at joint ventures in other areas of the world. While I was there, I had the opportunity to be involved in a joint venture in Mexico, which was very, very exciting. But also, I guess one thing I would say is I also was given the opportunity to really step out of my area of expertise, accounting and finance, and take on a different role in logistics and supply chain management. So that was really exciting and challenging for me at the time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Logistics, they say money makes the world go round. Well, the world doesn't go round unless you've got something to ship it in, right? Let's talk a little bit about your role in leading some of the company's initiatives while you're there. Perhaps let's start with a particular initiative or something that was key. And let's maybe talk through the aspect of the logistics on the and the operations among finance.
Okay, certainly. Well, you know, within this particular role, actually, you know, the challenges that we faced were not unique. Essentially, we needed to be able to provide our customers with superior service. But at the same time, you know, there's a huge investment in the manufacturing facilities. So keeping those facilities operating efficiently and not tying up a lot of working capital and inventory. Those were all the challenges that we faced. So it really was all about the efficient use of the supply chain. So we really set about trying to redesign the supply chain process, which, you know, entailed actually reaching out to our customers, building a partnership with those customers as our customers were apparel manufacturers, so they faced some of the same challenges that we did in the textile manufacturing. So it's really about understanding their processes, and then, you know, together we developed a forecasting process that helped us better understand what their needs and requirements were and the timing, and that enabled us to then bring that back and look at our production planning processes, our inventory management processes, and streamline the process from beginning to end.
That's often a tough decision for a company and for a CFO to have an individual's time or a group of individuals' time focus externally to the company for purposes of learning and education in order to bring that skill set and experience back. The challenge perhaps that management have at that point is going out with the trust and the faith that the information that's coming back will be for the betterment of your organization, effectiveness, efficiency, lower costs, and so forth. Were you involved in that strategic planning part of it?
Yes, I was. In fact, I was not only involved, but actually led that initiative. And I think you're so right. Sometimes we tend to want to stay with within our four walls and not realize though that it really goes beyond that, and to be effective, you have to consider the impact that your decisions are having on your customer. And also, I think, you know, the one other thing I learned through this was also the power of process management and how that can so enable, you know, having well-defined, executable processes can enable a company to be much more efficient.
And then at that point, does training kick in?
It does, very much so. And I think, you know, particularly as we think about totally changing the process and the way that people are accustomed to doing their jobs and even how they think about it. So clearly a key element once the process is redesigned and defined is the training.
In, you know, it's interesting. I'm thinking back to a situation. I was at a business dinner meeting about a year ago with actually about 40 different consulate generals from all over the world, and sitting next to a local CEO of an apparel company. And they actually were perhaps closer to the retail chain than you're describing, but they would buy in the fabrics in varying different sorts, and they would actually make the clothing. And this particular CEO said one of the most important people that he's ever coordinated with in his entire career has been the trash man and the janitor. And he talked about an example that saved his company multi-millions, where he would typically at end of day go down and have a chat with the janitor. And the janitor looked at him and he said, you know what, I'm having to work harder. I'm having to work longer these days. And the CEO said, well, why is that? What's up? And he said, well, we've got more trash. He said, I don't know what's going on, but I'm now having to empty the bins more, and we need more bins. What ended up happening is that the CEO investigated, and they had actually recently changed part of their process and layout and design of the fabric. And whereas the QA testing had thought that it was going to be more effective and efficient, what actually happened was there was now more wastage, and that was a substantial cost to the business. And a little bit of a lesson learned for me that I will say I've not known the janitors of every company that I've been at, but to your point, it's process.
It is, and I think another key there is to having the metrics in place and the measurement system in place, because, you know, you can redesign a process and think, you know, based on your analysis that it is, you know, it's going to drive certain results. But if you don't have the metrics in place and you're not measuring those results to know that you're actually achieving what you set out to achieve, then you can certainly wind up with a result as you just described.
So, Sherry, what we're talking about now is very much, and as I'm doing this, I'm coupling my hands so that my fingers interlace, it's very much a coupling of the operations of the business and the role of the finance function being so deeply embedded that not only are you part of it, that you're helping advise, counsel, and your financial indicators are driving not only the forward part of the process, the middle part in terms of counting, but the back end process in terms of what needs to be done for purposes of detection. That's a huge role for the finance function.
It is, but I think it's where finance functions have evolved over time, or at least it's where I believe they should have evolved if they haven't. You know, it's no longer is it just the back office accounting that's important.
The bean counting.
That's right. I mean, to me, the CFO's role in today's world really has to be more about really understanding how the business creates value and what are those key business drivers and really playing a key role in driving that business strategy. So it really is about partnering with the organization, all aspects of the operation, understanding what those key business drivers are, and then helping to bring forth the information, the management information and metrics that enables those key executives to make good business decisions and drive good business results.
Well, in that regard, Sherry, you had mentioned a little bit earlier about some joint ventures and acquisition, M&A acquisitions that you were involved in. That is certainly a key driver for growth of a business. Certainly going out and getting more sales, new customers, and maybe going into new markets can give you the opportunity for growth, but so can acquiring new assets, being that of other companies. The CFO often leads the role of not only pursuing those potential companies to acquire, but also integrating companies post-acquisition. As you're looking at these processes, the integration, and you're going to be looking at the people, the process, the systems, are there any particular lessons that you've learned about these kinds of integrations?
Yes, I certainly have. Have battle scars, difficult lessons learned. But I think one thing I've been through, while I have not been on the acquiring side as often, I've certainly been one of the acquired. And, you know, most recently, prior to joining Assurance America, I was part of 21st Century Financial Services, which was a division of AIG. AIG, as you know, sold the personal lines division a little over a year ago. So I was a key player in helping orchestrate the divestiture from AIG, meaning, you know, how did we decouple the organization from all the shared services and the IT platform support, enable the company to prepare itself for the purchase, and then I was also heavily involved in the integration post-acquisition. And I would say probably two key things come to mind in terms of lessons learned. The first is that oftentimes I think companies will underestimate the people side of the equation and the challenges in bringing together different cultures. I believe, you know, the acquiring company oftentimes just, you know, shortchanges the impact that being acquired can have on the employees. And it's very important post-acquisition that those organizations can work effectively together. So I think that's something that just going in, companies need to really pay a lot of attention to. Secondly is on the integration of processes and systems. Usually it's not uncommon to underestimate both the time and the cost involved. And what tends to happen is, you know, there's the typical whiteboard exercise. Well, the actual integration and making it happen and being successful is a lot more than just the whiteboard exercise. And, you know, the human nature is that you want to get the gains and the synergies much sooner rather than later. So the integrations that I've been a part of that have truly been successful generally have had, you know, dedicated staff and resources, say a dedicated integration officer or someone who's really leading the charge, and it's someone at the senior executive level.
Now, at that point, do you encourage companies to bring people in from the outside? Because all of a sudden you've got an awful lot of activity that needs to be done, and you still have to do the financial side of whatever, forecasting, planning. You may be looking at other acquisitions, other strategic initiatives. You still got to do the bean counting and the numbers side of things. So how do you manage that? Because you do need people that are knowledgeable of your industry, your systems, your process, but you may also need some thoughts of perhaps best practice, people that have done this before many times. How do you balance that?
I think it's a combination of bringing in that external expertise, as you just mentioned, those that have done this before, understand what the hurdles are and the, you know, best practices, coupled with actually just, I think the organization, when they go into an acquisition, they have to be willing to commit certain internal resources to that integration effort on a full-time basis. They may possibly need to backfill for that person in their day-to-day job, because it really isn't something that can be done part-time, and it really needs that consistent focus. I think it needs a strong PMO office, you know, with good project management skills and staffing are, I think, just a must.
To lead the charge and to keep people perhaps not only accountable but on track.
Exactly.
And perhaps if you're going behind, to assess the risk element of where that leads the initiative of bringing the companies together or divesting.
That's exactly correct.
Well, talking about impact on the financial function and the element of risk as it may be manifested in that coupling or decoupling, the CFO is often a role where that person is responsible for looking at risk. As I meet with companies perhaps that are at the stage of going from having somebody who's more accounting oriented to somebody who's more strategic and maybe taking on their first time CFO, or a CEO that perhaps doesn't truly understand the role of the CFO, one element is often strategic. Another element is often risk and risk control and mitigation. Talk to us a little bit about the risk elements as you've seen it in your career in these initiatives.
Well, I think as you mentioned, the CEO oftentimes may set some broad risk guidelines. But I think it's the really CFO's role to provide insight into those universe of risk, both operational and financial, and really trying to help the organization understand the impact that those risks can have, you know, on the organization and on the bottom line. You know, the CFO really needs to understand, too, how the risk appetite or risk profile of the organization, what impact that has on the capital structure, and as they're trying to look strategically at the, you know, at what's needed for the organization, that needs to certainly come into play.
Now, in that regard, Sherry, the risk structure of the existing company, that is somewhat cultural. It is most definitely people-driven. You can get into an emotional element of right brain, left brain. We in the finance function are not really known for being very good at right brain, left brain. We certainly have a focus on one side. That is often a new element for the CFO to manage. And gathering that data, how do you go about that? Is it question and answer? Is it relationship building? Or is it beyond that?
Well, I think it's both. I think it is both question and answer, but it is also very much relationship building. And I think it's also important that, you're right, in the financial world, we tend to always think in, very technical terms. And it's also being able to, I think, translate effectively those technical terms in a way that's understood more easily understood by those non-financial constituents within the organization.
So the CFO is the role of the educator in that regard.
That's right.
And the data gatherer. So now the CFO's gone out, gathered some data, building some bridges. What do you do to create that, to put in place that risk analysis? Let's say you're looking at a particular initiative. How do you weigh the elements of risk analysis? Is that where you bring in some of the financial planning and the detail orientation? Do you look at multiple scenarios and assign risks to each one?
You do. I think the organization first needs a set of good financial metrics around risk, but it's also, I think, about building out different. It's doing the scenario planning, as you mentioned, and understanding that, given this event, this is the potential outcome. Given a different event, this is the potential. Being able to take that information and help the executive team and the CEO understand what that means in terms of financial outcome for the organization is a key part of that role.
So then that translates into numbers, and then you take the numbers back. Is there sometimes a shock?
Oh, certainly.
Well, you said that. This is what it translates to. We may need to rethink.
Exactly right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your particular industry. Insurance clearly is a highly regulated industry, and insurance regulations do have an impact on the finance function. Perhaps let's focus not only on the, I guess there's an analytical and reporting aspect to those regulations and various different forms and that need to be released and published, but also the information systems that are needed to perform not only the reporting and the compliance function. A news article earlier talked a little bit about the information systems. Is the insurance industry becoming very much more an information systems type company?
Very much so. I think particularly in the segment that I am in.
Within auto.
Within auto insurance, because it's so highly transactional. If you think about what an average insurance policy costs, and then you look at the number of insurance, look at the revenue lines and translate that into transactions, it's, so very highly transactional. At the same time, you have the insurance regulations, as you mentioned, that add yet that other layer that other companies may not have. And not only is it regulated, but it's regulated by each state. So while there are a lot of commonality, there are differences as well.
And that would potentially impact growth. Maybe you start in one state and you want to take on state number two. That could be a whole different aspect to your business operations.
It is because the each state has to, your product and your rates have to be filed and approved in each state. As I mentioned, there are differences in what the state Department of Insurance and regulatory authorities will allow and provide. So each time you enter a state or each time you make a change, it's almost as if you think about having a product, while there are aspects of that product that can go across all states, there are each state has its own specific nuances. So it's almost as if you're maintaining a separate product for each state that you're doing business in.
In terms of financial accounting, do you manage those almost as separate business lines or separate general ledgers? How do you manage that?
I wouldn't say we manage them necessarily as separate business lines. We do, however, have to monitor, you know, each state's performance is measured independently. We have metrics around each state. Within our organization, and most, I think, auto insurers have what they would refer to as product managers for each state, who really, you know, their role, the product manager's role, is really to understand the state regulations inside and out, do the pricing and predictive analytics so that they understand how to appropriately price for that product. We in finance, obviously, you know, have to be linked very tightly with the product management development organization, and be able to translate the activities, the changes that they're making when they're planning a pricing change, or it could be some nuance around a fee. We have to be able to turn around and translate that into what that means to the financial results. And, mm-hmm. you know, interestingly enough, when you talk about insurance, as I made the transition from manufacturing to insurance, I think it was a bigger learning curve than I would have anticipated. You know, one thing I've always have told people, that one thing about accounting and finance that I liked is the fact that it's portable across industry, and that is very true. But I did find that insurance is certainly the one unique animal. And one way I relate it is, you know, in most companies, you know what your cost of goods sold is. You're able to calculate your cost of goods sold and then use that information to set price. In insurance, you don't know the cost of goods sold until after you've sold the product. And sometimes it's even, you know, months, or depending on what line of insurance you're in, it could be years. So it certainly makes that much more challenging.
So the good CFO is the one with the right crystal ball, huh?
That's a good way to put it.
Well, you talked a little bit about insurance companies being high volume transaction driven. How does that impact your strategic or tactical elements of your finance function?
I think it means that we have to be efficient with managing data, and to me that translates into our IT platforms and processes, and really how we go about, you know, there's tons of data, but it's what we do with the data that's important, and how we turn that data into management information that's useful to the business and allows them to make good business decisions.
Now, does information systems or information services report up through you in your role today as CFO, or is that separately managed by a CIO?
In our organization, it's separately managed by a CIO.
Okay. What we're finding very often is that there's a convergence of the CFO and the CIO function. Many of our guests over the last year in the show have talked about the CFO now being one where they are managing the information cycle. And that's a new transition for the CFO to take on.
Certainly is.
Well, how have you seen the role of the CFO change over time? I've just mentioned perhaps one of the changes. Have you seen in your years of experience any other changes of the CFO?
Well, I believe that the role over the years, obviously, particularly when I began my career to now, it's certainly become, I think, much more complex. I think a lot of the things that you mentioned earlier with, you know, what's happened with risk management and some of the financial crises that have occurred in the last number of years have certainly changed the role of finance and the CFO as well.
And I guess 16-column analysis pads are long gone, right?
That's exactly right. But I do think it really has, as I mentioned, evolved over time to where it's the CFO, I believe, is expected to play certainly a much more strategic role in strategy development, decision making, planning, and analysis, as well as that key element of risk management.
And interestingly enough, the universities are making that same change and leap. The accounting courses now have very much more of a business spin and very much more of strategic. And I actually teach at some local universities, and the challenge often is that somebody without the experience, perhaps that is the typical student in maybe an MBA program or a degree program, undergraduate, they don't have the experience to be able to understand strategy because they haven't yet gone through the tactical. And that's a big challenge. That's a big growth for a CFO, I think.
I think you are exactly right. I think it is, because it's something that you innately, I think, you know, you have to have those experiences and have to go through to really begin to be effective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, much potential growth we hear in the U.S. is about new markets for an organization such as yourself, maybe new products, new product lines, new ways of reaching existing customers, but it may be about getting new customers, and perhaps that might be venturing into new states or it might be venturing into new countries. Perhaps for small companies today, the complexities of foreign currency hedges, swaps, and so forth, and the complexities of the accounting around that could actually make it somewhat of a burden. But in today's market, international markets is, you know, you're the cottage industry of the person in the basement can be selling abroad very easily. How has the international markets impacted your organization, knowing that you are somewhat regional today, but that you do focus on a more broad market?
I think for our organization today, it probably really hasn't had a tremendous impact, just, you know, because of the size of the organization and where we're focused. But it clearly, you know, we're becoming a much more global economy, as we all know. So it is certainly changing the role, I think, of CFOs and just the way that you know, that we think about things, the way we think about how we do business, and the implications of that on the business outcome.
If for no other reason, I think companies that maybe don't even have a sales focus or purchasing focus from abroad, the cost of interest, the cost of financing certainly is impacted by international markets.
Oh, very much so.
Well, Sherry, I hate to say this, but we have come towards the end of the show. And our last question, we have a tradition on the show to ask your CFO tip of the month. What is yours?
Well, mine would be directed, I think, at college grads or those who are just beginning their career. And I guess the message that I would like to depart is that really, I truly believe your career success is within your control. Some would say that it's about being in the right place at the right time. And while clearly that, you know, helps, I really don't think that's, you know, the probability of reaching success, if that's what one is waiting on, I think is pretty low. I would say instead of waiting for an opportunity to present itself, you need to create that opportunity. I would challenge and encourage those who are just setting out in their career to, you know, volunteer for assignments that are outside of your responsibility or your current role. You know, be willing to kind of step outside of your boundaries and take some risk. You know, take the initiative to learn everything you can about the organization. In fact, I don't think we ever stop learning. And
I was about to say that's a good initiative for CFOs of today.
That's right. And I was also, you know, seek a mentor, someone that you hold in high regard and respect and is respected by others. And I think, I guess last but not least, I would say stay true to your values. But I think if you do those things, then you will find success in your career.
Well, Sherry, those are great tips. And I would like to thank you, Sherry Williams, for being our guest today and sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine.
And we'd also like to thank our contributors. Today, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, who provided us the article at the News CFO, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. By SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized businesses. They can be found at www.sap.com/SME. And last but not least, Financial Executive International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. They may be found at financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO or know someone who would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via that website. Thank you very much for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.